Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Monday, June 1st. New week, new month. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Sam.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good. People don't realize we don't say a word to each other before the show.
No.
We're too busy preparing. So it's not like we know what happened before we talk about it.
Right.
Which I think is a good thing, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to rehash things and stuff. So, in case you think we prepare, we do not. So coming back from the weekend, we probably had, both of us had some fun. Well, you said you were going to, and I finally got some things to do on the weekend, you know. So I found myself not having time to relax at all, which is very unusual, you know.
So what did you do?
Well, I did a lot, but first let's cover what you did. And also we're going to have a guest calling in a few minutes talking about a book. Pretty interesting topic, wouldn't you say?
Sounds like it could be.
Yeah.
I don't really know what the book is about. I mean, I know the title, but...
Right. Well, you'll find out together with us.
Yes.
So you had big plans. You had sleepovers. You had parties. You had LACMA. You had...
Yeah.
Wow, you had all this planned. Did you get all that done?
We did everything except, I think, like one activity Friday and Saturday.
But you did get to sleep... get to have like a slumber party and stuff.
Yeah.
With both your friends. That's cool. Yeah. What's the LACMA thing is what? A jazz evening? Is that what it is?
It's free jazz every Friday.
Oh, I see. Okay.
During the summer.
It looked pretty fun. You know, I mean, like, is there like a lot of people? And
yeah.
Stuff
a ton of
really?
People.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So a lot of people like jazz. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And everyone brings like a picnic and wine and food, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds cool. So the sleepover was fun?
It was a lot of fun. We went out for a little bit to a place called Sassafras, which is like a New Orleans-type bar. And then we ordered pizza and hung out at home and watched some of Chef's Table from Netflix, which is now my favorite thing. We watched all of it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a series or something?
Yeah, and it covers different chefs across the world and their style and how they got into being a chef and what their restaurants are like. And it's really cool just to hear their stories.
Right.
And their cooking is like an art, so it's just very interesting.
Are you into cooking and stuff at all?
Not really.
Not really. I didn't think you were.
But I appreciate people that are.
Yeah. So, and you appreciate good food.
Yes. I don't have the patience to do it or to clean up. But
I know.
Same if here. I had time and I, you know, I'm sure if I had a home with like a bigger kitchen and more mouths to feed, I would be more into it.
You'd get more creative about
it. Right. But now it's just me and I don't really cook all that
much. Yeah, I know. It's not worth it to cook for one person, you know. It's like you said, it's too much time to prepare and then you have to clean up.
Right.
You know, I really don't get this. It's like people will prepare like for a big dinner for days and then it's over in like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, people are done eating and that's it. But it just shows you how... food is important in our society.
Very.
You
know? Everyone's got to eat, so it's like the most important thing.
Yeah. But it's not just here. I don't know. Did you ever watch The Sopranos at all?
Yeah.
And if you remember, well, someone's calling now, but we can't pick up now, folks. So try to call back at 10:15. We were talking about about The Sopranos and stuff. If you notice, almost every scene is around food. They always sit around the table eating, besides killing each other. But I mean, some cultures really are like around food and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And you can tell, you know, because the people are not fit. They eat a lot.
Yes.
You know, again, it's a generalization, but, you know, So, that's cool. So, did you get to go by the pool at all? Did you enjoy the weather?
We didn't do the pool. We went to Burke Williams and hung out there for a couple hours.
Yeah.
And then we laid out outside, but there were so many bugs and flies that we got over that.
Wow.
went inside.
I've never seen any bugs here in LA, you know? I mean, people talk about, like, mosquitoes and stuff in other places. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a mosquito here in my life.
Well, we were sitting in the grass, so
yeah.
There were, like, flies that hang out around the grass, and it was just a lot.
Right.
So we went inside and watched the rest of Chef's Table.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you know what? Let's just take the call because I think our guest is calling and
great.
We might as well take that. So we're going to be joined by Bert Ash. Is that you, Bert?
This is Bert.
Bert, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
My pleasure.
Sure. Sorry, we let it ring for a little bit, but we didn't plan on you calling in until 10:15. But that's okay. Since you were calling, I didn't want to keep you waiting. So welcome to the show, Bert.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sure. Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia, my home office.
Oh, wow, in Virginia.
Cool.
Yeah, what's it like there? I mean, what's the weather like there now?
It's gorgeous.
Really?
About 88, 89.
Wow.
But not terribly humid.
Yeah. There you go. You see, you guys have to deal with humidity. We never do. So,
that's right.
Yeah. So I understand you're going to be in L.A. signing some books. Is that true?
I am.
Great.
Yes.
When are you going to be here?
I'm going to be at Esalen Books on June 9th, which is the day the book actually gets published, at 7 p.m.
Wow, congratulations to you. So the
Thank
book
you.
So the book hasn't come out yet. It's just I guess next week, right? It's coming
That's
out.
Right.
Awesome.
Although
awesome.
It's actually available on Amazon.com right now. It's in stock. If you buy it, they'll send it to you.
Wow.
But the actual official release date isn't until June 9th.
Oh, that's interesting. You see, that's one thing about publishing I didn't realize, that you can actually list the book and start selling it before the official announcement or something.
I had no idea either. we're both finding that out right
yeah.
now.
So welcome to the publishing world.
That's right.
So we're talking about Bert's book, Twisted, My Dreadlock Chronicles. And tell us a little bit about what the book's about. I mean, obviously the title gives it away, but tell us how, I mean, obviously you wrote a whole book about dreadlocks and stuff. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I'm fascinated.
Well, the title, Twisted, is a kind of double entendre in the sense that it speaks to the actual act of twisting hair so that they become dreadlocks. But the colloquial term for twisted, as in kind of sideways, kind of weird, kind of different, is also in the mix as well. It's a sort of trek of the psychological and identity hurdles that I had to go over in order to actually twist my hair into dreadlocks, since I, in my own mind, was not exactly the sort of guy who would or should have dreadlocks.
What sort of guy are you?
What's that now?
What sort of guy are you?
Well, just a sort of an ordinary, conventional, not particularly dready kind of guy. And so having that be a goal of mine, simply because I guess I just decided I finally wanted to do something that I was attracted to, but felt kind of different for what I usually present myself to the world, is part of the narrative as well.
Right. So what you're saying essentially is there's like preconceived notions about people that wear dreadlocks. Okay.
Yes, there are.
So,
and those preconceived notions both flow to individuals from the world, but also project out from individuals in terms of their own psyche, their own identity, their own sense of who they are.
Right. Wow, very interesting. I mean, I can already see, I mean, there's definitely a lot to write about it, now that I think about it. You know, obviously we don't go around thinking about dreadlocks every day, but once you bring it up, I imagine there's like a lot of history and culture behind it.
Absolutely. I mean, they've been around for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our more recent encounter with the hairstyle, it's the Rastafarians from Jamaica that kind of brought them to a kind of contemporary reality in Western culture, and they've moved from Jamaica to England, and they moved from Jamaica to the United States. And now anybody does it for whatever reasons that they do, and nobody really assumes that you're a Rastafarian if, in fact, you're wearing dreadlocks. But people kind of sometimes nevertheless assume that you're a Rastafarian if you're wearing dreadlocks.
Right, right. Now, what was your attraction to it?
You know, it was a sort of symbol of the outside, if you will, a kind of pushing back against a sort of American conventionality that attracted me hugely. I talk a lot in the book about the sort of bohemian, unconventional personality that some people sort of take to naturally as a result of being born perhaps in an artistic household or from having friends that they sort of naturally grew up in. And if in fact you're somebody who grew up in the suburbs and had, you know, wonderful parents but sort of conventional parents and found that persona of the bohemian really interesting, but felt like it wasn't something that sort of naturally grew out of my upbringing and my sense of who I was, I wondered if dreadlocks would be a sort of pathway into kind of representing or being more of that sort of person that I felt like I kind of was inside, but didn't present in any sort of physical sort of way.
Right. So you did this. When did you decide to change your hair?
March 9th.
Uh-huh.
1998. That was the day that I looked into the mirror and said, you know what? I'm growing dreadlocks.
Wow. And do you still have them to today?
I do.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So I imagine, you know, since you said people have, you know, ideas about dreadlocks and the people that wear them and so forth, has this affected your life?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, to a certain extent, I would be unaware of the extent to which it's affected my life.
That's
sometimes
true.
People react to you in ways that, as far as you know, they're just reacting to you just like they would react to anyone, but you don't realize until later, or maybe you never realize that they reacted to you in a completely different way than they would react to somebody else,
right,
simply because of what you look like or the color of your skin or what your social class markers might be or what have you.
Right.
So in a certain way, I really don't know for sure if they've affected my life in a profound sort of way. I can tell you that they've affected my life in a personal way, in that my sort of my passageway, my dalliance, what I call in the book my dance with bohemia, has been one that has allowed me to, I think, to have a more profound sense of who I am as I tried to be something that I kind of thought I was, but I wasn't sure, if that makes any sense. In other words, I went on this journey, and at the end of the journey, and I put end in quotation marks because obviously I'm still,
you're
alive.
Still around. Yes, thank goodness.
But that I wasn't, I believe I found out some things, and I shared this with readers, of course. I found out some things about myself that I really wasn't wholly aware of, and I don't know that I would have discovered that if I hadn't taken what was for me a huge stylistic leap by growing dreadlocks.
Yeah. Now, so now people that are around you, family, friends, and stuff. But what kind of reaction did they have? Did they welcome this? Did they criticize you? What happened?
Good question. It was sort of split into two camps. Well, actually, three camps.
Really?
my mother was in a kind of camp of horror all her own. she was not a fan of the style. And my poor, long-suffering father had to hear her complaints, because she really didn't complain that much to me.
She had someone else to take it out on.
Yeah, exactly. Other than her, it kind of fell into surprise, and what was surprising to me was the other camp, which was the, you know what? I kind of thought you might do that one day, which surprised me. I had no idea that people in my life viewed me from the perspective of, that kind of makes some sense. And it makes me wonder if I was hinting without really realizing it that I had this other side to me, even though from my point of view, it was completely and totally hidden.
Yeah. Wow, very interesting stuff. You know, I mean, that's it's. I mean, you don't talk to people that have dreadlocks and discuss the background of it and all that stuff. You know, so it's really interesting to hear the thinking behind it. You know, and it's very cool. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Bert Ash. His book is Twisted: My Dreadlock Chronicles, and you adopted dreadlocks back in '98. So we're talking about, what, 17, 18 years now.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a long time. So now let me ask you this. How do you take care of your hair? You know, I mean, it seems like pretty difficult.
It changes over time. When you're getting them, it is extremely labor intensive. It's a process that is that takes time, it takes commitment, it takes constant attention. But I have to say, once you've passed a certain level and you're aware of and comfortable with the process, then actually it's as non-labor intensive as one might think it is all along. I really don't have... I wash my hair once every couple of weeks, dry it. If I feel like twisting it, I'll twist it. If I don't feel like twisting it, I won't twist it. Mm. And it's easy peasy now. Wow. The problem is when you're actually launching yourself on the path to what's referred to as the locking process. Mm. And I go into minute and hilarious detail in the book, where it's you sort of have to wrap your head around doing things with your hair that, at least in terms of a guy's point of view, I'd just never done before and really hadn't thought that much about.
Yeah,
you know, women often, since they pay a lot more attention to their hair, usually going to the beauty shop or changing hairstyles with regularity, that interaction with change is a little more familiar. If you're like me and your hair was about a quarter of an inch long when I decided I was going to grow dreadlocks,
right?
And then I was cutting it myself. It was just something that I really didn't think that much about. Mm-hmm. That was a huge psychological undertaking, along with the sort of pain and hassle and exasperation of gaining the hairstyle itself.
Yeah. Well, fascinating stuff. The book is Twisted: My Dreadlock Chronicles. You can already get it now at Amazon, and I would highly recommend it just because I'm totally interested in this now, because it's a cultural thing and there seems to be a lot behind it. You know, I mean, we could talk about this for hours now, but that's probably why you wrote the book, so you don't have to keep talking about it all the time.
That's exactly right. Although I do hope that it will prompt hours long conversation.
Yes.
Once folks have read the book and hopefully find it sufficiently provocative and interesting.
Yeah. How long did it take you to write the book, Bert?
15 years, actually.
15 years.
On and off.
Well, yeah. So since the beginning, how have you kept, like, records or a diary or something? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that was one of the things that that prompted the book itself. I was keeping a journal at the time, back in 1998, and was sort of working through what I was thinking about and what my reaction to this was or my reaction to that was, or what individuals so people in the world would have reactions, both strangers and colleagues and friends. And after a while, I realized, you know, this might be something that other people might find interesting as well.
Yeah.
And that's when the turning it into the book began.
Very cool. It's not just another book about self-help or psychology or spirituality. This is, I don't think there's a lot of titles that talk about dreadlocks. So you really brought up a cool topic that, you know, people probably don't think about, but in the back of their minds, like we said, have probably preconceived notions or judging people by their hair. You know,
yep.
Which is like bizarre, but it does happen. So I'm glad you took on that issue. So, Bert, thank you so much. The book is Twisted, My Dreadlock Chronicles. Is there a way for people to contact you, social media, and a website?
Sure. I'm tweeting at Twisted Book. And I've got an email address that is twisteddreadlocks@gmail.com.
Okay, cool.
And I'm on Facebook, Twisted My Dreadlock Chronicles. They could like my page.
Awesome.
And sure, reach out.
Awesome.
I'd love to hear from folks.
Bert, thank you so much. And let us remind you again, if you're in L.A. and you want to meet Bert in person, go to ESO One Books in L.A., and you can meet him. That's on June 9th, which is a Tuesday, next Tuesday. So go out and check it out. Bert, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. All the best to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, it's funny because this was like a last-minute guest over the weekend. And I thought, this sounded fascinating to me. You know, it sounded interesting because I'd never read about this stuff. And I... usually there's not many things I haven't read about, so that was pretty cool.
I mean, I think it's interesting just the using the dreadlocks as a vehicle for talking about you as a person and your personality, and also like preconceived notions and judgment from other people and judgment about yourself from yourself.
Right.
And really breaking that part down. And the dreadlocks are just, you know, the reason to even look into those things.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously it's a way of expression, you know, and I think that it would be difficult to wear dreadlocks because you're different, you know. Most people do not, you know. So it's like they were listing some of the celebrities or known people with dreadlocks, and there have been a few, but not that many. You know, you have like Bob Marley and
Lenny Kravitz.
Lenny Kravitz, right. And Whoopi Goldberg and them. But... very interesting stuff.
They're also black. White people can have dreadlocks, too.
That's true. Can you think of anybody?
I mean,
I've seen it, but you know where they get them? At least they get cornrows in Hawaii and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, white people do.
And Jamaica, you can go there.
Yeah, or Jamaica, Bahamas. That's true.
But speaking of, you know, changes to your appearance, Bruce Jenner came out today in his Vanity Fair article as his new name is Caitlyn.
Caitlyn?
Caitlyn Jenner.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So now, is he like ongoing sex change now?
No. The image on the cover of Vanity Fair is him as a woman, and I believe she is now here
officially
to stay.
A woman.
Here to stay, yeah.
Wow.
You should check it out. She's very pretty.
Really?
Yeah, it's very impressive. Like, what can be done even medically and cosmetically to become something else.
Right. But we have to remember that most people who are transgender cannot have the luxury of going through all these surgeries and all this treatment and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can see for him it's hard because he's a celebrity, but for other people it's hard because they really don't have the money or the means to do the work that he's done, you know? So they're sort of like caught in between genders.
Yeah, well, you know what? Then if it was meant to be that he was on this reality show for all these years and his life was documented as it was, for him to get to be 65 and be able to become Caitlyn in the way he would want to be, then great.
Wow. I guess better late than never, right?
Better late than never.
He gets to express himself. Wow. All right, so, thank you, Bert. Actually, they're sending me a copy of the book, so I'm looking forward to reading it. So I finally decided to do Uber, and I finally got accepted and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy came, told me a few things, checked the car out, bam, I was ready to go. You get an app and you start riding. So Saturday night I started driving, and what time? I don't know. I must have done like about 5 hours maybe.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
a long time.
Yeah, from 9 until... But you know what? I didn't even feel the time go by. It just flew by. And I must have... I think the first night I did like 9 trips, you know. But actually, none of them were really short. But it's funny because, you know, you start discovering about it as you do it, you know. And So you realize that, you know, since you never know where the customers or the passengers going, that you never know where you'll end up. You know, so I started from the valley here, from way like in Woodland Hills. I ended up in like past Hollywood, Silver Lake, Koreatown, that sort of thing. And even though it's not that far, but, you know, I was driving in Hollywood, like on the hills and stuff, you know, places I never even knew existed. So it was pretty cool, you know. And I guess Saturday night is full of young people going out and stuff. So, and then I also realized it's mostly young people taking Uber because older people don't really know how to use apps and stuff, you know. And you got to use the app for everything there.
Right.
So... So I noticed, at least in my experience, people in their 20s and 30s mostly. I think I had one couple maybe in their 40s, but that was it. So the driving itself is actually, you know, I mean, you got to like to drive. If you've got to enjoy driving. If you don't, then don't do it, you know, because people, you know, the big discussion is always about Uber is like, can you make money at it? And I already... You know, I already said it on the show that I'm not really doing it for the money. I'm doing it to fill my time. And it's nice to have a little extra money too, but I'm not going to sit there and count the pennies and stuff, you know, whereas some people do. I went on a forum online for people that drive Uber and stuff. And I went and just shared my experiences on the first day, you know. I figured people would be interested, you know, new people and stuff, like what to expect. So I started laying out like what I did and everything, and who I had, and how I handled such situations, and it must have got like 600 views in one day already, you know. And but sure enough, I go there to check out the responses and stuff. Negative garbage all over the place. Everybody's like putting me down, being condescending. You'll see, it's your first day. You'll see how terrible it is. I was excited on the first day too. Blah 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 blah. And it wasn't just one guy, you know. So I got really irritated, and I wrote a message back. But essentially, my question is, and I wrote to them. I said, look, you don't like it? Uber doesn't owe you anything. You don't like it? Go do something else, you know. But this victim mentality, I can't stand it, you know. It's like people constantly complaining about everything, complaining about the passengers, about Uber itself, about anything they can complain about. Obviously about me posting this. And he's like, well, who's your target audience? I said, well, obviously not you. This is like for newbies. And if you've been here for a while and stuff, you know, why are you even reading these stories? You know?
Yeah.
But I got a few messages that people really liked it. There was a lot of likes to it. So I figured at least maybe I helped some people. But the bottom line is, I mean, I'm not going to get into all the details and stuff. But the funny thing was, like, you know, I had like 3 hot girls in the car. After I dropped them off at a party, I get 3 handsome guys, you know, about the same age. And I said, wow, I should have matched you up with the girls that were here before.
That's a cool idea.
Right?
Yeah.
So that was funny. And we started talking, and one of the guys said he's doing a podcast. I said, well, great, come to our station and stuff. So so the first night really was marked by a lot of
people. Yeah, Sam, you should have brought those 3 guys for me to meet.
That's true. I think they were younger than you, though.
Oh, well, that's not going to work.
Actually, you know what? Look, late 20s.
No, that's not going to work. No. But you know what you should do? You should just have a picture of me on your phone.
Okay.
And then whenever, like, an attractive, like...
So you want me to try to fix you up with someone?
All right. Okay. So you can screen them the while you're driving. Yeah. All right. And then you'll ask them if they're interested, and then we can just set it up.
Yeah, I'll give them my card or something if they're interested.
Love it.
Wow, that's a great idea, Jen.
Thanks.
Okay, so I'll have to hope for handsome guys and stuff in the 30s.
Yes, that can put together sentences, aren't wasted,
right,
and aren't picking up chicks.
Okay. Well, then I don't know while they're in the car.
That's,
you know,
true.
But it's... But no, and I mean, obviously, the most striking part about this is overhearing the conversations because, you know, people talk all the time. But last night I got two girls who were speaking Russian. And so the thing is, so like I said, you know, the first night was exciting. You know, I got home like at 2:30 or something, you know, but I felt fully satisfied. I felt I passed the first day and then I liked it. You know, I like being with people and stuff. So then last night I decided to work for a few hours, and it's funny because once you do it, it's kind of addicting, you know. I mean, I don't know why, but it just is. I think because you wait to see who the new person is, where they're going to go to, where you'll end up in. It's sort of like an adventure, you know. Look, I can see where you can burn out if you do this 10-12 hours every day for months. But that's not my intention. That's not what I'm going to do.
Right.
So, and then some people are like, you can't make enough money with this. It's like, you know, okay, so I can't. But as long as I don't lose money and I'm having fun, that's all that's important to me, you know. And so obviously it's not for everyone. So for people to come and make blanket statements and stuff, it's totally wrong. You know, it makes no sense. So what I'm saying to people is, look, you want to try it. Definitely, I mean, there's a lot of benefits to it. The downside is not that great, you know. Uber takes 20%. They take this, they take that. But so what? You wouldn't even have this without Uber. You know?
But there are people in the world that complain, and they'll complain about anything.
Exactly. They're just haters, you know.
Right.
But I can't help but realize how I felt like crap after that. You know, when people flame you online, it's not a good feeling. You feel like a few people are against you, and it's all for the world to see.
Right. Well, you also put it out there. But at the same time,
they start making you doubt yourself and all that.
But don't go read that stuff.
Yeah. No, I know. That's why I decided I'm not reading that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I don't need the forums anymore. I get some ideas in the beginning. And that's it. If people are not interested in sharing experiences nicely and peacefully, then the hell with them. Who cares?
Right.
You know? I asked them, I said, why are you still on these forums if you don't hate Uber and you burned out on this?
Yeah.
Why are you even here talking about it? So, and every city is different, obviously, and every night is different and all that. Like, you get a text, like last night, I guess there was a U2 concert at the Forum.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, go ahead and drive to the Forum. There's a lot of action going on. So, it's, but I thought, I'm not driving all the way there. So, you know, you have to be careful. And also, I realized, you can pick your areas. You don't always have to be in the same areas. I realized here I was driving, like, people took me, like, deep in the mountains, in the canyons. It's like, wow, you drive forever. And, I mean, it's nice to see some places. Last night, though, I was driving up on Mulholland there on the hill. And these people live inside a cloud every night. I'm telling you, it was, like, so foggy. It was amazing. It was so eerie. Just like you're in a movie or something.
Yeah.
You know? And I had those two young, hot Russian girls in the back talking Russian the whole time. So, you know, sometimes people get involved. Look, the guy right before them sat actually next to me. He was just him. Sat next to me, shook my hand. We started talking and stuff. So you see how different it can be.
Yeah.
You know. So some people just don't care to talk. I just give them a couple of opportunities to say something. If they don't, I just shut up. The only thing I miss is having music while they're in the car.
You know?
But maybe I could start putting some mellow jazz or something in the background.
Well, you know? I usually, when I get in the car, if somebody's playing music I don't like, I'll ask them to put on a different station. Or if they're not playing any music, I'll ask them to turn it on.
Right.
But I, for the most part, I feel like most Ubers I get in have music on, but it's usually, like, lower.
Yeah. It's lower. And I think, you know, like, something jazzy, I don't think anybody would be opposed to that.
Not me.
Yeah. So maybe I'll try that. We'll
see. Did you rate everyone well, or did you give
Yeah, I gave everybody rating? 5, but no, not everybody gave me a 5. And go figure, you know, maybe you can just do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing or look at them wrong or something, and they would give you something less than that. You start with 5 stars.
Right.
I'm at 4.7 now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened there. But That's I'm really so irritated. Weird. I know. And you know what? Jen, the whole thing is I ended up being this good Samaritan because the ride with the three girls in Hollywood, she didn't put in her destination. So I came in to put it in instead of her. Bam, the trip was completed. $4. That's it. She's like, I think I got charged. I'm like under pressure now. What am I going to do? You know, start another trip now. She has to start it from her own phone, blah, blah, blah. And it may not get me. I said, you know what? I'll just take you guys there. So that was like probably a $15 trip or something that I had to give for free or for $5.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah.
But
then she probably gave you a good rating, right?
I don't know. You don't know who gave you the ratings.
Oh,
that's what
interesting.
I'm saying.
And they don't leave comments either, do they?
No comments.
Rate. Yeah. I usually give people a 5 unless they were awful.
Right.
But you have to be really awful. Like, you have to go the wrong way, even though it's in the, like, it's in the system. You have to, like, be rude or
right
or
that's
no,
what I'm
I
saying
know.
I mean, you know, I'm like so welcoming and everything and always smiling. I think I'm cooler than most people that drive Uber, probably, you know, and because I'm just a nice personable person, you know, but some people just don't like that, you know.
Who knows? People are weird.
Yeah. But I'm not going to live and die by those stars. I don't care, man. Who
no,
cares?
I mean, it's funny because my girlfriends and I will all compare ratings.
Really?
Yeah, because you can ask the driver what your rating is.
Yeah.
And then you know. Otherwise, you don't know your rating. So I think mine is like a 4.8 or 4.9. But I tried really hard. Like, I'll get in the car and say, hello, how's your day? What are you doing? Have you been working a lot? Wow. How's your night going? And then I'll stop talking usually.
Yeah.
But at least I'm friendly in the beginning. And then I say thank you. And then sometimes I'll get out the car and be like, 5 stars, and then I'll run away.
Wow, very cool. You see?
I try.
Yeah. Well, actually, those guys told me 5 stars definitely and stuff. I can't think of who didn't, but there were a couple people that didn't want to talk. So, and you can see that some people walk in and they're just not, they're not happy.
Right.
They're not happy people.
Yeah.
You know, they just sit there, they're quiet, they give you sort of a frown.
Gotta love those people.
Gotta love those people. So, yeah, so all in all, and then I signed up for Lyft as well.
Oh, you did. You're really doing it.
Yeah, so we'll try that out and see what that's like. Yesterday, I thought, I'll have them both on, and whoever comes in first. But, no, it's wrong, because I get 2 calls at the same time for both of them. So you pick up one, you have to reject the other, and it doesn't look good. It doesn't, I think it hurts you in a way or something. So, yeah. So, because you have to have like a certain acceptance rate too, I think, like 97% or something.
Oh,
like
interesting.
That. Yeah, they don't want you to reject a lot of calls.
Mm.
So I realized, no, you got to go with one or the other, man. So yeah, so I'm learning new things every day, and it's and that's it. We'll see how much I'm really able to do during the week. I can't imagine I'll do that much. But
no, you are always up till so late at night doing work.
I know, exactly. You know, but. But I'm thinking, like, maybe after I finish the shows here, I do the video shows at night here, so maybe 9 to midnight I'll do it or something, a couple hours. It's just that, you see, that's the thing. You don't know where you'll end up. So I figure if I'm doing it in the valley, I'll probably stay somewhere close by here. But if you go to different places, it might be just to explore new places, you know. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to do is to explore new places. I'll do when I have more time, because I figured, you know, where it'd be fun to drive is in Santa Monica,
right,
for example. Hollywood is fun too, although there's a lot of people. But yeah, it's
a lot
there's
of traffic.
Action. Yeah, there's action. Yeah. So anyway, that's my experience with Uber, and if you ask my opinion, give it a try. You owe it to yourself to at least try it, see if you want to do it. It's a great way to make extra money. And, of course, if you're willing to work hard, but you want flexibility, That's the way to go. You know, somebody even blamed me or accused me of trying to recruit drivers for Uber.
Why would you?
After that message. Because you can. Because if you refer someone, you make $200.
Right,
so
yes.
I think that's what they thought I was trying to do or something.
Ah.
But you know what? There's another idea that came up when I was talking to someone. So if you guys want to start a business, here's a great idea. You see, you can actually have people driving for you. You can have more cars on your account and more drivers. So, for example, I could give you a car and tell you, here, you drive. This is how much you're going to make. This is the percentage you're going to make. But if you don't have a car and, you know, it might be a great idea for you to do. And then I make more money without even having to do anything.
Because is it like a pyramid thing?
No, not at all. Not at all. Think about it. It's just you hire. It's like you sublease the thing. You know, let's say somebody doesn't have a car, you know, so they don't have to put in any money. It's not a pyramid thing at all.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, you don't have to pay a dime for this stuff. You make money from it.
Right.
But yeah, so somebody actually was doing this and it seems pretty cool. I guess it's set up to do that because why would they let you have multiple drivers and multiple cars in the same account?
Yeah.
So I think they're all for it. Anyway. So there's a couple things that I was reading here this morning. They were asking who's more likely to cheat in a marriage. And they found something interesting. They're saying that a man who's not the breadwinner, who's married to a wife who's 100% breadwinner, are more likely to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out why. So they're saying it's probably because when you're not the breadwinner, you feel less manly.
Right.
And when you feel less manly, you're probably do something that's pretty masculine, like go and have sex.
Right. You have to build your ego in some way.
Right. And that's what they're saying. I mean, it kind of makes
sense.
That's
a new study, though. That's just obvious.
Why?
I mean, that's been discussed for years, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's weird that that's a new study. I mean, maybe there's actual facts behind it, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is a new study, they're saying, you know, by... Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, so just think about it. I mean, it's... and I'm thinking also it's because they probably don't have much to do.
Yeah. You know,
they have more time. They can get away with it because right. Their spouse is at work. They don't know what's going on. Yeah, it would be the perfect storm to cheat is when you're not working and you're the man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yikes.
Yeah. So they're estimating that just married people in general, they're saying that they estimate about 20 to 25% of married men cheat. And 10 to 15% of married women cheat, which I don't know how accurate this is. You know, I mean, I've heard of so many women that cheat. And maybe I just choose to notice it more. I don't know. But, yeah, I think it's a lot higher than this. I really do. You know, I mean, there's so much cheating going on.
Yeah.
When I talk to people and stuff, I hear about stories of other people that are cheating and... It's like, I can't believe this, you know.
Why get married if you're going to cheat?
Exactly.
Why
you know?
Stay married?
Or yeah, why stay married, you know? Or even with a girlfriend. I mean, if you're going to cheat, why don't you end the relationship first? Because obviously you're not interested in
yeah.
it. And go and do something else. But why hurt the other person?
Right. Like, set that person free.
Yeah.
And go find somebody that actually wants to be with them.
Yeah. It's one of the most hurtful things to do is to cheat on someone sexually, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Because it's so intimate. I think men even take it harder when their spouse cheats, I think, because there's a certain amount of possessiveness maybe or something, you know. So I don't know, but I know that men are less forgiving. I mean, I know of women that were totally forgiving. I mean, the guy was like, even if he'd been cheating for years, and that's what I don't understand. How could people cheat for years?
Don't know.
I
don't know how anybody lives a double life. I can barely remember what I've told, like any stories I've told any friends.
Right.
Like, let alone like this lie you have to start living and cover your tracks and.
Yeah, it's all lies.
Yeah.
You constantly have to lie and to cheat and to hide. I don't see the upside of this. Just for a little sex, you know.
Ugh.
Yeah, just go and I don't know, buy some sex, whatever. I don't know, but it's yeah. I mean, it can create problems, you know. And I feel that people, you know, just because I was cheated on when I was very young, so I've become very opposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, even when people think if they're in a relationship but not married that it's okay and that. But you know what? It's not okay. If it's something you wouldn't tell your spouse, then it's probably wrong.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Yes.
And I just don't understand. I mean, people that are close, well, maybe these things happen in relationships that are not close, but still. When you're in marriage, I think your partner pretty much knows where you are most of the day.
Do they?
I think so. At least in my relationship.
You would assume they're at work.
Well, but let's say this. What if you're in touch with your significant other, like, on a daily basis? I mean, even if you're married, then you talk to each other, you text to each other, whatever.
Right.
And then you call and he's not answering. You know, what story is he going to come up with? Now that we have cell phones, there's no excuse not to answer a phone.
I mean, I guess you could say you're anywhere. You're at a meeting. You're at lunch. You're in the gym.
Yeah, but when they know your routine,
yeah,
then you can't do it. You can't do it because once you break that routine, they'll know right away.
Right.
You also have to obviously have some hidden money because you need places to get away to or... To do whatever.
Yeah, it's a life of lies.
It's a life of lies. It's like you said, it's a double life.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad for people that have to go through it, even the cheaters, because they're obviously miserable if they can't get their life straight.
Right.
And be loyal to the person, you know. And another thing I don't understand is the person who's cheating with the married person. I mean, the thing is, what do you think they're going to do to you? You know, I think if a person cheats once, then they figure it's okay. You know, maybe some would rehabilitate themselves, but I think once a cheater, always a cheater, because they feel that it's, or at least at one point they felt it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know where I stand on that. I think that if somebody cheats once, I would never be able to forgive.
Yeah,
but I do think that there's a different kind of person out there that can forgive, because
right.
if somebody also was remorseful or, you know, wanted to go to therapy or,
you know, claimed it was a mistake and it's a one-time thing.
Right.
Yeah.
If it was like something like that, maybe, but I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah,
I would always be looking over my shoulder. I would feel like there was always something I didn't know.
Right. And you constantly picture it in your mind.
Yeah.
Having sex and stuff, you know.
I would not be able to trust that person again.
Right. Exactly. I mean, trust is something that you have to build over a long period of time.
Yeah.
And you can destroy it in seconds.
Yeah.
You know, just like an earthquake.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
You build for years and then it destroys everything in 2 seconds. Did you go see San Andreas at all?
No.
No? Are you going to see it?
No.
No, I know. I don't want to either.
I don't want to fear the worst thing that could happen.
I know. Somebody was going to the movie. They said, oh, well, it'll teach us earthquake preparedness. I said,
I feel like there are other ways to do that.
Yeah. Exactly. That's funny. But, you know, my dad's here. I want to take him to a movie, but... what is it, like superheroes and things like that? It's not really for him. But, you know, there's a lot of action and stuff like, like Mad Max, for example.
Yeah.
Right? My 82-year-old dad is not going to get into Mad Max. So I'm like, okay, Dad, what kind of movie do you want? He's like, I don't like the new war movies. Like, I took him to see American Sniper a few months ago. He did like it, but he says it's not... I like the World War II movies. I said, well, of course, you grew up with that,
right.
You know? I said, but they don't make them anymore. Mm-hmm. So you got to welcome some other stuff, you know?
Well, that movie Fury came out.
Fury?
Yeah, that was a World War II movie.
Is it? When did it come out?
It was like part of the Oscar season that just happened.
Oh, is that the one with the tanks with Brad Pitt?
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
It was really gory.
Yeah. I don't know if you'll want to see that. Was there action too, or was it? I thought it was more drama, right?
No, it's action.
No, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Maybe we'll get him that. But that's the thing. You get that on Netflix, but he's already watching TV all day. So I want to get him out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know. He liked that theater where they had the reclining chairs and everything.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Have you been to one of those at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, the AMC, I think. But, yeah, so... But yeah, you don't go to movies that often. I haven't gone to a movie in a long time. Actually, since American Sniper.
I went to a movie last night, actually, at the Dances with Film Festival. Mm. A friend's movie. It's called Estrella. It was really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is it a full feature?
Yeah.
Wow. How do people make two-hour movies, man?
I think it was like an hour and a half.
An hour and a half, still. Yeah. That's a lot of time to fill.
Yeah.
You know, and in movies, things happen like... instantly, I mean, quickly, you know, so, and then, you know, each scene like happens for a couple seconds, but then you have to redo it, you know, for hours or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. But I guess indie movies are easier to make. There's not that many special effects and things like that. It's more like dramas, right?
Yeah, it was a drama.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are out of time. Looks like a beautiful day outside.
Yes.
Everybody go out, make it a great day wherever you are. In Texas, they're saying that it's still flooded. It's terrible there. Yeah. Did you see how much rain they got?
Yeah.
They're saying they got enough rain for 8 inches of water for the entire state of Texas. That's how much water they got. That's a lot.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So to them, we wish them all the best. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.